Hello and welcome to the Semantic Cybersecurity Brief, our fortnightly podcast where we discuss all things cybersecurity. I'm Dick O'Brien and joining me today is Semantic Threat Researcher Bridget O'Gorman. In this week's podcast, we'll be discussing a new targeted attack group dubbed Lightbasin and the return of the Lyceum Group. But first, we're going to be talking about a number of our own pieces of research because over the past week, we at Semantic's Threat Hunter team have published three new pieces of research that are probably worthy of discussion.
Yeah, so let's start with you, Dick, I suppose, because the first thing we published was about the discovery of a new family of ransomware.
Yeah, we found a new ransomware threat, which is being used in a targeted fashion, and we've named it Yan Lu Wang. And it's definitely a new threat on the scene because it actually still appears to be a work in progress.
Okay, and how did we discover this threat?
Well, one of our analysts found it when investigating an attempted ransomware attack against a large organization. The first piece of malicious activity that we came across was the use of AdFind, which is a legit command line Active Directory query tool. And they found that on the organization's network. And it raised red flags because AdFind is often abused by ransomware attackers as a reconnaissance tool. And it kind of allows the attackers to move laterally via Active Directory. So then a couple of days after this suspicious AdFind activity was observed, the attackers then attempted to deploy the Yan Luang ransomware against the target. Now, initially, we suspected it was a Conti attack because the ransomware actually copied a few things that Conti does. It was very kind of Conti-like behavior. However, once we started analyzing the malware, it quickly became apparent that this was a different tool and indeed a family of ransomware that we hadn't seen before.
Okay, so what does this Yan Luang ransomware do then?
Well, in many ways, it does a lot of the things that you would expect of your average target ransomware family. The first thing it does, it runs a precursor tool, which creates a text file with the number of remote machines to check in the command line. And then it uses WMI to get a list of processes running on those remote machines. And then it logs all the processes and remote machine names to the text file. So then the Yan Luang ransomware itself is deployed and it does a few things. It stops all hypervisor virtual machines running on the computer. It ends all of the processes that were listed in the aforementioned text file. It includes the SQL and the Veeam backup solution. A lot of ransomware attackers at the moment seem to be kind of going after Veeam and trying to stop it in victim environments. And then it encrypts the computer itself and gives each file that it encrypts the Yan Luang file extension, and it drops a ransom note with the unoriginal name of readme.txt on the compromised computer.
Okay, so one question I have is the name Yan Luang, you know, obviously comes from the file extension, but what does it actually mean?
Okay, well, apparently, according to our experts on Chinese culture here, Yan Luang is a deity in the Chinese Taoist religion. Now, we've already had a few people asking us, does this mean that the attackers are Chinese? And our answer to that is that we really don't know. Given the name, yeah, sure, they could be Chinese, but they could also just have an interest in Chinese culture, or it could just be a false flag.
Yeah, it could be one of many things, I suppose. And one final question. You mentioned that it looks like this ransomware is still under development. So why do we think that?
Really, we think it was because it was missing some of the functionality that you'd find in the more established ransomware families. So it's possible that implementing this functionality was beyond the ability of the developers, but we think it's more likely that they simply planned to implement it as a later date. And this was essentially like a minimal viable product, for want of a better word. So, for example, one of the steps that was missing that we'd often see in targeted ransomware attacks was data exfiltration. They didn't seem to do that at all.
They must be working in like an agile manner if they're putting out an MVP.
Yeah, I know. Some of these people are very professional, at least, in their aspirations. Anyway, let's turn to one of the blogs that we published this week, too, because it was something you wrote, Bridget.
Yeah, so I wrote the blog we published just there on Monday, which was about a previously unseen, most likely nation-state back group that we have called Harvester. So Harvester is targeting organizations in South Asia, and specifically we saw targeting some organizations in Afghanistan. And it's what appears to be basically an information stealing espionage campaign. And what's interesting is Harvester is using a new tool set as well. So these attacks began in June this year, June 2021. And we actually saw the most recent activity just earlier this month in October. So this does appear to be more or less an ongoing campaign with some very recent activity. And in the campaign, we see Harvester use both custom malware as well as some publicly available tools. And the sectors that it's gone after include telecommunications, government and information technology. So, you know, I suppose very commonly targeted sectors by ABT groups, really. And the capabilities of the tools that it uses, also the fact that it's custom developed tools, as well as, I said, the victims that are targeted, they all point to Harvester basically being most likely being a nation state backed actor.
Yeah, and you mentioned they use a new tool set. So perhaps you could maybe tell me a bit more about that.
Yeah, so the attackers deployed a custom backdoor, which was called backdoor.graphen, on victim machines in this campaign. And it deployed this as well alongside other downloaders and screenshot tools that basically gave the attackers remote access to the victim network and allowed them to spy on user activities and also to exfiltrate this information as well. And as well as the Graphen backdoor, we also saw Harvester deploying a custom downloader and also a custom screenshotter as well, which took screenshots on victim machines. And as well as this custom malware, we also saw the group deploying some off-the-shelf tools, including Cobalt Strike Beacon and the Metasploit framework, which are, you know, off-the-shelf tools we frequently see used by cyber criminals and APT groups. And while we don't see what the initial vector is in this campaign that Harvester used to compromise victim networks, the first evidence that we see of Harvester's activity on victim machines was actually a malicious URL. And then after this URL is seen, we observe the group basically started to deploy the various tools I've mentioned, so the downloader, their custom backdoor, etc., in order to gain remote access to the victim network. And another interesting thing to note, actually, about this activity is that the group really tries to blend this activity in with legitimate network traffic, and it does this by leveraging legitimate CloudFront and Microsoft infrastructure for its command and control activity. And so this is basically an additional step the group takes to try and keep its activity under the radar.
Okay. And you mentioned it was likely a state-sponsored actor. Were we able to attribute it to any specific state?
No, so we don't have enough evidence yet to attribute this Harvester activity to a specific nation state. But as I said, its use of custom backdoors and the extensive kind of steps it takes to hide its malicious activity, as well as its targeting, does all point to being a state-sponsored actor. And, you know, the activity we do see, it makes it clear that the purpose of this campaign is espionage, which, you know, typically is the motivation behind nation state backed activity. I suppose as well, the targeting of organizations in Afghanistan in this campaign is also interesting, given the, you know, massive upheaval, obviously, we've seen in that country recently. And the fact that, you know, Harvester's, this most recent activity was seen just earlier this month, just a few weeks ago, you know, it means that organizations, you know, in this region, in South Asia and in the sectors mentioned, should be alert to the malicious activity that we outlined in this blog, just to make sure they're not potential targets.
Yeah, and Harvester is a great name for a group that is specializing in data exfiltration. I know it's probably a coincidence, but it does kind of match up with their purpose. Nominative determinism, I
think. Yes, nominative determinism, definitely there. But let's go back to you now, Dick, I think, because the third piece of research we published was a blog that went out just yesterday, which was again actually about an espionage campaign in Asia, although this time the targeting is slightly different. It's in Southeast Asia.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, there really is a lot going on at the moment. So with this one, what we found was what looks to be an espionage campaign that uses a previously undocumented toolset. Now, it targeted a range of organizations in Southeast Asia, in this case, including organizations in the defense, the healthcare and the information and communications technology sectors. So the campaign began in September 2020 and it has run until at least May 2021. So it could be kind of still ongoing given how recent the activity is.
Yeah, in quite a long period of time there, really. So maybe tell the listeners more about this new tool set.
Okay. It essentially consists of some custom loaders, a modular backdoor, which sort of seems to be sort of their main tool. There's a key logger as well. And then they also have an exfiltration tool that is designed to abuse the cloud storage service Dropbox. We don't know how the attackers get onto victim networks. The first sign of any malicious activity we've seen is when one of these aforementioned loaders is used and it decrypts and loads a payload from a .dat file. Now, we haven't managed to get our hands on the payload yet, but it is almost certainly a modular backdoor. So why do we know this? It is because it can be inferred from one of the modules that we did find. This module, which we call the orchestrator module, points to the existence of a separate DLL module that exposes at least 16 functions, as well as to the existence of a custom binary command and control protocol that's used by the orchestrator module, but implemented separately. So the module we do have does appear to be a core component of the backdoor, and it runs as a Windows service. Aside from that, we have the keylogger, and we think that this has been authored by the same developers. The reason we think this is because it shares some unique strings with some of our other tools and some string obfuscation techniques. The attackers have also used 7zor, which is a legit tool. It's a lightweight version of 7zip. And then they use this in conjunction with the aforementioned data exfiltration tool that patches up the, sends the stolen data off to Dropbox.
And do we have any idea who the attackers behind this campaign are, Dick?
No, we don't at this point. We can't really attribute it to anybody. And indeed, it appears that the attackers took a few steps to try and complicate attribution. So, for example, it isn't very clear to us what language the group speaks, and samples of the backdoor module that we found contain strings in what appear to be both the Cyrillic and Urdu scripts. The only potential clue found to date is that one of the organization's attack was also targeted by a tool that is used by the Leafhopper group. They're also known as APT30, and they're linked to China, and it was kind of in roughly the same time period. However, there's no evidence as yet to tie that tool to this campaign. You know, it could be just coincidence that Leafhopper was also targeting this organization. So if you ask me to guess, I would probably think it's a known group with a new tool set rather than your research, which was probably, you know, a hitherto unknown group. But that's just a guess at this stage. Now, let's turn to a few other blogs, ones we didn't write ourselves for a change, that we wanted to mention this week.
So I was reading a couple during the week that I thought were kind of interesting. One being written by our colleagues at CrowdStrike, who published a blog this week about a hacking group that they dubbed Lightbasin, which they said had successfully compromised at least 13 telecommunications companies worldwide in the last 2 years. For likely intelligence gathering or espionage purposes. And Lightbasin is actually also known as UNC 1945, and actually was previously profiled by cybersecurity company Mandiant back in November 2020. And at that point, it was reported that it was compromising managed service providers in order to reach targets in the financial and professional consulting industries. So its victimology seems to be either have changed or it has quite a wide victimology. It's not really clear. So CrowdStrike says that the group has been active actually since at least 2016, and that it appears to have very extensive knowledge of telecommunications protocols, and that it is able to emulate these protocols basically to facilitate its command and control infrastructure and to utilize tools to retrieve what CrowdStrike described as highly specific information from mobile communication infrastructure, such as subscriber information and call metadata. So CrowdStrike said that the group primarily targets Linux and Solaris infrastructure, which is also interesting, as these are widely used by telecoms companies, and that the group interacts with Windows systems only when it needs to. And I suppose this is probably, we would surmise, and the researchers kind of surmise, that this is to help, you know, decrease the chances of its activity being discovered, as, you know, the protection on Windows systems, you know, is generally kind of a lot higher than what we see on Linux operating systems. And the gang also appears to understand telco operations well enough, as well as this specific targeting as of the Linux and Solaris infrastructure that's used by telecoms companies. They also appear to be essentially able to kind of, you know, surf the carrier to carrier links that exist that, you know, for ourselves enable mobile roaming when we go to other countries, you know, when you're able to switch to, you know, a different carrier when you're in a different country. But the attackers appear to be able to use these links to spread their payloads. And so it does seem that the level of sophistication and the knowledge of how telcos operate among these attackers is quite high, which, you know, makes them quite dangerous, really. And CrowdStrike did say that Lightbasin, they did say too that Lightbasin is a skill group, you know, that uses this custom malware, and that its OPSEC is very high level, and that the information it is collecting, CrowdStrike said, is likely to be of interest to intelligence agencies. It didn't attribute this activity specifically, but it did say that it found an artifact in its investigation that indicates the developer of this tool has some knowledge of the Chinese language. However, neither Mandiant in its earlier research or CrowdStrike now actually attributed this activity to a nation state. And as we said with the Yan Huang ransomware, you know, it's very possible that that kind of thing could potentially be a false flag, or just, you know, a developer in a different country who happens to have knowledge of the Chinese language.
Yeah, interesting group nonetheless.
Yeah, definitely one to watch, I'd say.
Yeah, and then there was another targeted attack group that's kind of made a bit of a comeback recently too.
Yeah, so this is some research from Kaspersky, who said that the Lysium attack group has re-emerged, and at this time it is targeting victims in Tunisia in a new campaign. So Lysium was first spotted by SecureWorks in 2019, and at that point it was targeting victims in the critical infrastructure sector in the Middle East. However, in this new activity, Lysium apparently was focusing on two entities in Tunisia, though the sectors that those entities were involved in weren't mentioned in the report. And the vendor also said that its analysis showed that Lysium has evolved its malware in this time into new malware written in C++. And Kaspersky actually separates this malware into two variants, which is dubbed James and Kevin, which are kind of funny names for malware variants. But apparently both those names appeared frequently in the malicious code. So that's why they were given those names. And both these variants are designed to communicate with the command and control servers over secure DNS and HTTP tunneling, which makes the malicious activity harder to detect. And Kaspersky also said that it found another new malware also being used by the group, and that it surmised was likely designed to proxy traffic between internal systems on compromised networks. And it also said that the group is also using a new PowerShell script and a custom keylogger in this campaign. So it does appear that, you know, quite a significant amount of retooling has taken place there. And Kaspersky also said that it noticed certain similarities between Lysium and the DNS espionage group, which has previously been associated with the oil rig cluster of activity. So basically, they are both Iranian groups that have been reported about in the past. And it was speculated by SecureWorks in its initial report too that Lysium may have links to some existing Iranian attack groups, but neither security company were able to definitively link Lysium activity to any of those other known attack groups. But I'm sure it's something that people will be keeping an eye on. And certainly, it seems that whoever is behind Lysium, you know, they're obviously a skilled actor. They've obviously gone to the trouble of retooling recently. So it's certainly activity that organisations, you know, should be aware of for sure.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks, Bridget. Okay, let's wrap it up there because I think we're nearly out of time. But if you've been enjoying our podcast, don't forget to subscribe to avoid missing out on all of the action in future. You can also follow us on Twitter at Threat Intel or Medium at medium.com/threat-intel. If you'd like to read our latest research, including all of those blogs which we were discussing earlier on in the podcast, they can be found at semantic-enterprise-blogs.security.com/blogs/threat-intelligence. We'll be back again in a fortnight's time, but until then, thank you and goodbye.